Welcome to Meet the People of MCB with Beverly Cascaden and Chip Haley, sponsored by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Hello and welcome everyone to another edition of Meet the People of MCB. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Beverly Cascaden.
How you been, Bev? It seems like it's been a while.
It has been a while. Where does the time go? And, you know, you would think it's July or August outside with all these cicadas now buzzing around. Oh, one scared me to death, dive bombing me this morning.
Oh, goodness. I tell you what, I'm so looking forward. My grandkids, I've got one grandson and my twin granddaughters are getting ready to graduate high school. So we're going to be going down to Fayetteville. Let's see, when is that? That is, oh my goodness, it's this Thursday.
Graduation.
So, and then my grandson, he'll be graduating. They'll do their graduating services Saturday and Sunday and all this kind of stuff. So, I always love to go to the grandkids' graduations. It's always a special time. I know you've not yet had that experience, but you will. You will. So,
yep, it will be here before we know it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, Bev, you told me about this person that we're going to be interviewing today. I don't know her as well as you do, but I'm looking forward to the interview. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to bring on at this time, Linda Musgrove. Linda, welcome to Meet the People of MCB.
Howdy, howdy.
All right. So, Linda, we talked a little bit before we started the recording, how we like to conduct Meet the People of MCB. So, share with us a little bit about your vision loss. What was the cause, result, or anything that you'd like to share with us about your vision loss?
Well, I was the only girl. My dad's family, glaucoma, ran very dominant. He had a sister that was completely blind with glaucoma and another aunt, his aunt, that was completely blind with glaucoma. And being the only girl, I was born with two of the things that was very much hereditary in my family's hands, family's background. One, glaucoma in both eyes, and two, webbed fingers. On my left hand, there was my middle finger, my ring finger, my pinky was webbed, and on my right hand, my middle finger and my ring finger was webbed. And that was an interesting process. And then they started realizing that I had glaucoma in both eyes, and the left eye was blue and the right eye was green. And they immediately started doing St. Louis Eye Clinic, Dr. Walters. I love him to pieces. He's passed on now. They immediately started doing eye drops and going in at that time. The only thing they could do with glaucoma was go in and release the pressure in the optic nerve, in which I started, they wasn't sure how my right eye was doing, and the doctor said they were able to save my right eye, but not the left, unfortunately. And I went completely blind in my left eye. And then when I was 17, they said that they kept going in and releasing pressure. And then Dr. Walter said at the age of like 17, he said, we can't keep releasing the pressure. It's sort of like when they would sort of like releasing the, like going out to a tire and releasing the valve stem. It's sort of releasing the air out of the valve stem is what they did. And sort of like what they would do with the glaucoma in the optic nerve. And then he got to the point where he said, we can't do it anymore in the left eye. And so he recommended to remove the eye and put an implant in the eye and then give me an artificial eye at 17. And at that same time, I was on four different drops. They called it the Cadillac of drops in my right eye. desperately trying to keep the vision in the right eye. And that was the main, the focus was both eyes at one time. And then when they took out the eye and they did a prosthesis, the left eye always closed because it was, I guess, sort of stretched out. Because when the eye would swell, it would stretch out that eyelid. So they decided that they were going to, which they don't even do anymore, which will probably explain a lot, and Bev will get a kick out of this. They put 50 little bitty 5 millimeter beads in surrounding my eye to push out the eye. So yes, I do have marbles in my head. I'm serious. I have marbles in my head. People say, you got marbles on your head. More than you know. Which they don't even do that anymore. So it pushed out the eye and they cut off part of the eyelid. So the eye sort of matches the other eye. And then everything started was going okay. And then I had to get a new prosthesis, which I have to get that like every 2 or 3 years. And I kept looking at the my guy, Bruce Cook, who makes my prosthesis. And he's like, why are you looking cross-eyed? I said, you know, I've been looking in a mirror like that. Like, I feel like I'm looking cross-eyed when I look. And what happened was my pressure being 35, 36, 37, up to 40 started, which that's what glaucoma does, affecting your field of vision. So my field of vision was closing in. So immediately they sent me down to Barnes or to Washington Hospital and Washington University. And they said, yeah, your glaucoma is getting out of hand and you're going to lose sight totally if we don't do something. So they went in and put a shunt, and so far the shunt. But yeah, in my left eye, I'm totally blind. In my right eye, I'm sort of blind. Like if I look forward, I can't see anything on the bottom. So I'm shallow. I guess it's tunnel vision, I guess is what you'd say. And so right now I'm struggling with maintaining my glaucoma and getting the retina shots, which the retina shots makes the glaucoma go crazy because it increases the pressure. So Dr. Siegfried, which is my glaucoma doctor, wonderful doc, she put a shunt in my eye. So now when I get my shot, and all that fluid from that shot, the shunt takes care of it and doesn't damage the eye, the glaucoma part. So, you know, so right now I see a retina doctor every 2 weeks, simply because I'm on a 20-week, but as Dr. Barrow said, you are one in a million that gets a shot every 20 weeks, but I want to watch you. So I go to my retina doctor every 2 weeks, and I go to my glaucoma doctor, and she watches my glaucoma. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it with the eye situation.
Okay, very good. Thanks so much for sharing that with us. Wow, that's really something. So you mentioned, Linda, that you were, you're the only child in the family. Is that what you said?
Three brothers and one girl. Yeah.
Okay. And so are your brothers close? Do they live by close?
Oh, well, my two of my brothers are deceased and my other brother is still living. And yeah, he's within like 45 minutes from me. Very close. Yeah.
Okay. And we were talking earlier too. Do you have children?
Nope. I was single. Pretty much, I was a social worker and a minister, and I pretty much dedicated my life to helping other kids. And then I did take my nephew and raise him 20 years ago. And then he's 20 now. So I decided, hey, this is my time. So I got married. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Are you and your brothers, are you guys pretty close?
Yeah, we're the only obviously living siblings. So he's got his own issues. He just got multiple myeloma cancer, and he was in for 8 years, and it just came back. And then he had a mini stroke last week. So yeah, with my medical stuff and his medical stuff, yeah, we're pretty tight, real tight.
And with your brothers, what about their vision? Is it, do they have
You
any
know,
glaucoma issues?
no, and all my nieces and everybody, I tell them you get your butts to the doctor at least once a year and get that pressure check, you know, watch that, because especially if they're sort of more along my dad's gene side, and nobody so far, thank God, has ever came up with a glaucoma or webbed fingers. Now, the guys, my one nephew, actually the nephew that lives with me or that I raised, his dad had one finger up to the knuckle, and but ever since then, no other kids has had anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And your husband's name is Ed, is that correct?
Ed Dang Bar, like going to the dang bar. Yep.
Okay. How long have you and your husband been married?
2 years, June.
Oh, okay. Well, that's coming up here pretty quick. Okay.
Is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. So your nephew, how old is he?
The one that was living with me?
Yeah.
20.
Oh, okay. Well, he's still pretty young then. All right. I bet he can
And
be
he's
a
a young
handful at
one.
times. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he, me and my, it was my roommate. She's my adopted sister. You know, I always say my sister from another mother or my godly sister. We pretty much raised him. And then when I got married, I moved out, and me and my husband made our own home together. So he's with my Anita, and I see him. I see him a lot. I frequently. And then me and Ed and my dog, which if the mailman comes, you'll be hearing her loud and clear here. And she's my five bark alarm is what she is. So
Okay. Well, I'm going to turn it over to Bev here in just a second, but share with us a little bit about your education. Did you attend college anywhere?
yes, I did. I did. I did. Sort of a funny story. I was sort of one eye was blue, one eye was green. So I wore my bangs over my eye, and people would say, you know, Musgrove, you're going to go blind in that eye if you don't uncover your eye. And I just laugh. And then when they'd see I had one blue eye and one green eye, and they believe this, honest to goodness, they believe this. I said, well, my favorite color is blue. So I got a contact in blue and I put it over my eye so I can have my favorite color with me the whole time. People, honest to goodness, believe that. They thought that I really put a blue contact over my eye to make my eye blue. And then all of a sudden, when I had my prosthetic lens and I cut my hair back and I blew dry it back, everybody's like, oh man, you got tired of your eye being blue, right? And I'm like, yeah, I was tired of that, man, tired of the hair hanging over my eyes all the time. I just wanted to go back to normal. And they're like, only you, Musgrove, only you. So people truly believe that. And so I was a class clown, go figure. And I was always in the I was in the principal's office every week, go figure. And at that time, they didn't just yell at you, suspend you, or detention. They set your tail on fire. And needless to say, once a week, my tail was set on fire because I was a class clown. And so when I went into my in 10th grade, I decided I would start behaving myself because I was getting tired of going to the principal's office. And I said I wanted to go to college, and I was informed that I was too dumb to go to college.
Oh,
And
wow.
to just not even try because I was too dumb. And so I went ahead, graduated, first one in the family ever graduate from high school. And I started to go down a very wrong path because I grew up in a very my family history was sort of bad. And so I started drinking and just doing things I shouldn't be doing. And my mom and dad, well, I'll just share because this is part of my education, because it's part of the proud moment. My mom was addicted to nerve pills and alcohol, and my dad was an alcoholic, and my dad would beat my mom. So I grew up in the domestic violence. Meanwhile, my brother Don, and I don't know, this is TMI, but my brother Don molested me from the age of 6 till 17 when he would give me to his friends for drugs. And
Oh my gosh, Linda.
so
Sorry.
very, very I was very angry. And so I think that's when I would stir up so much trouble at school. And I struggled in school because I have comprehension issues and I don't like to read. It's because it's not comfortable with me with the one eye and comprehending. So when I graduated high school, knowing all that behind me, I guess when I was 21, legally able to drink, but I was drinking a long time before then, my mom and dad decided they were going to get, well, they were getting divorced. They had the appointment with the attorney. They were getting a divorce. And then my mom told my dad, I'm going to church. And my dad says, well, if you can go, I can go. And they went to Hope Church there on Bell Fountain Road. And they walked in and the preacher was going to preach something different, was going to have a sermon. And he said, you know what? I'm not going to preach what I was going to preach on today. There's a couple here that this is their last chance. And I'm going to preach on hope. And so he taught the whole service on hope. And my dad looked at my mom and said, what did you call that preacher? And my mom says, no, John, I didn't say a word. And so eventually what I saw was my mom and dad renew their marriage, fall madly in love with each other, quit drinking, quit everything, and turn their life around for God. Well, wow. Here I am going in the same direction that they were. Drinking, smoking, doing, you know, going to bars, you know, doing things I shouldn't be doing. Well, then they started talking to me about God and about living for God. And so I decided that I'd give this church a try. And I had a bunch of really cool young gals that got me on a softball team and just loved me into the kingdom of God. And I knew then that I had a special calling upon my life. I knew way back when I was younger, that I knew I had a calling in my life, but I never really pursued it. So I knew then that I had a calling upon my life. And so I applied at Evangel University in Springfield, Missouri. Like, I got saved. And then a year later, I applied at Evangel because I knew that God had something bigger and better for me than working at a Blue Cross and Blue Shield behind a computer. I knew God had something called because I already started with the children's ministry. So I already knew through the children's ministry that God had a bigger plan for me. So went there and they looked at my grades and said, you know, your grades are pretty rough, Linda. And I'm like, yeah, but I partied a lot. I partied all the way through high school. I explained my past and they turned right around and said, you know what? We're going to accept you, even though your grades don't show it. And I graduated with honors, got scholarships and everything.
Congratulations.
With three degrees, one in psychology, one in sociology, and one in a minor in business. Not too bad for a person that said they were too dumb to go to college, huh?
Yeah. Wow.
What a story. That gives me goosebumps.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah.
Well, I always believe in the Bible in Romans 8:28, it says all things work together for good.
Yeah, that is right. What nationality is Musgrove?
I believe it's Dutch and German.
Okay. Do you speak any Dutch or German?
No, but I'm as Dutch as they come.
Well, on that note, Bev, I'll pass it over to you.
No, you keep going, Jim. You know, where do you go? You ask that question.
I'm German Dutch. I'm very stubborn, very hard-headed. And that has helped me get through a lot of this stuff, being stubborn, that I wasn't going to let anybody pull me down or push me down. And I wasn't going to let my illnesses or whatever disable me. You know, I was going to make that a strength and just keep on plugging. And that's pretty much how my mom said when I was a baby, they had to wrap my hands up. And my mom, I screamed bloody murder. I was like 2 years old. And the doctor says, what is wrong with her? And she said, give her her thumbs. Would you please?
Oh my God.
So he cut my thumbs out and I was able to pick stuff up. And my mom said, from the time I could walk, I was always I was the most independent and tried to walk out that front door. She said, nothing puts you.
Wow. That is great. Mm-hmm. That is great. Mm-hmm. Is it my turn, Chip?
Yes, it's your turn.
All right. Anyway, I want to point out that you live in Louisiana, Missouri.
Yep.
You want to tell everybody what street you live on?
St. North Carolina Street.
North Carolina Street. Don't you love it? You never thought about it?
No, I never thought about that.
Leave
and the funny thing about this street is North Carolina is actually south, and South Carolina is actually north.
Wow.
It's completely the opposite. Years, I still hadn't figured out why North Carolina is south and South Carolina is north. Doesn't make a bit of sense.
Yeah. Louisiana, Missouri.
Yeah. And what is the population there in Louisiana?
Oh, maybe it's a small, it's a river town, maybe 15,000. It's a river town. It's small. Yeah. It's along 79. You get the Winfield and you get the Ellsbury and you hit Louisiana, Clarksville, then smack dab Louisiana. So.
Yep. The river road. Yep. I used to, when we go to Illinois, we would drive up to Louisiana on Highway 79 and cross a bridge there. But was it in 93 we had all that flood?
Yes.
So to get to my mom's in Illinois, we couldn't cross the bridge in Louisiana. We had to go up to Hannibal and cross there, Quincy, you know, and then come down.
Yeah, they've redone a lot of that since then. Since that flood, they've redone a lot of it. They put a new, we have a new bridge in and all that now. So levees and they've redone a lot. It almost completely shut down Louisiana. That whole 79 was completely shut down. It was bad. It was really bad.
It was. And even down on 79, where it would be flooded on the road. I can't remember if it's Clarksville or Winfield or Foley. They probably all were.
They all were, yeah. They all were flooded.
But it's such a neat drive. I always enjoy that. And can you imagine Louisiana back in the day, you know, when river traffic was so predominant, you know, too, that.
Well, they still do. They still have a lot of river traffic down here. We got the dam down the way, and people go and on the riverfront, and they watch the. We still have the one bridge, and that swings to the left or to the right, and lets the barges in and stuff. People, you know, I've yet to find the fascination. My husband loves to looks at the river, and I look at him. I say, "Honey, it's still there." And he goes, "What?" I go, "The river, it's still there." And he's like, didn't it neat just to watch it? And I'm like, Maggie, it's still there. Okay, what are we watching? You know, we've seen the same thing. It's still there. He does the same thing when we go to the lake. You'll have to go to the lake before we leave and after we leave. He'll on our way out. And I'll say, hey, guess what, Ed? The lake's still there. No matter what lake we're at. You know, but it must be a guy thing. I don't know.
Well, you know, it just shows a difference in people, too. You know, we don't all want to be alike, or else it'd be a very boring world.
He'll say, you have your way of doing things, and I have my way of doing things. It doesn't make your way right or my way right. And how do you think that stubborn Dutch German Lindis responds? No, my way is the right way and your way is the wrong way.
And if he just accepts that, everything will be fine.
That is correct. That's correct. There's your way, my way, and the right way. And I'm the right way, buddy boy. Buck it up, buttercup. We're going to do it this way, you know. So, and then when I occasionally have to eat crow because, you know, he'll show me his way and I'm like, well, yeah, your way's all right, you know. And then we'll do it that way the next way. And you're like, well, wait a minute, I thought my way was all right. I'm like, well, yeah, it is. Okay, whatever. So, speaking of Louisiana, I do drive an hour and 15 minutes to get to my SCCB meetings.
Yeah.
Because I love it that much.
Yeah, yeah.
And let me introduce, Linda is our new secretary. And, oh, my gosh, she is just, she's really going at it and finding some social events for us and some activity for everybody. Here we go, Linda. Come on, baby, light my fire. And she does.
Well, I think that my biggest thing with wanting to join SCCB is when I started, I had a real bad retinal occlusion, and I literally was legally blind in a matter of just going to bed one Thanksgiving evening, Eve, and waking up to complete from 20 over 5 to 20 over 90. I mean, it wasn't good. And I was lost. And my friends said that I didn't know where to go, what to do. So my friend said, hey, look, you need to join these guys because they can help you out. And so because I was the person, you know, that this is my passion for that. This is one thing I really have a heart for. I was the person that would go to Walmart that look normal, not a cane, not saying that you have a cane, you look abnormal, but it doesn't say I'm blind. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't look like the typical blind person. I look like a typical seeing sight person. And I would go and could not read the labels. I could not read the prices. And the lights from, because of retinal occlusion, the lights from Walmart would almost make me go, it would ruin my vision even more than it already was. So I was the person that sometimes would get lost in Walmart and would sit there for minutes trying to read, you know, with everything, put my phone on there, put it 2 inches from my face. I was a person that would go to Walmart cashiers or helpers and say, hey, look, I need help. And what do they tell me? Oh, it's in aisle J6. Yeah, I know where it's at, but I need help. Well, do you need help reaching it? Because I'm short. No, I don't need help reading it. I need help reading the description. I need help reading the price. Oh, well, what's wrong with you? I can't see. Imagine that. And then so I'd have to pull them and get angry. And then I would get angry because I couldn't see. And I get frustrated because I couldn't see. And then by that time, sometimes I either started crying and just walked out and said, forget it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, at that time they didn't have shop online. They didn't have that, you know. And so I was the person that would get lost in subdivisions. Because they said I could drive during the day when my vision got a little bit better, but I end up retiring from the state of Missouri after 27 years being a child abuse neglect investigator. I was that person. So my passion when I went and joined the SCCB was that we needed to not only help those that are definitely non-seeing, but we need to help those that are struggling and they're losing their sight. And they don't know where to go and how to get help. And they're trying desperately to hold on to what they have and their independence. And part of my passion for that is to involve the community, whether it be businesses, whether it be workplaces, that just because we walk like a duck and we may quack like a duck, we might not be a seeing duck. You know what I'm saying? We might, you know, we might look like a duck, but we may be have a duck with a problem. And that's what I wanted to get involved, get and start training and teaching Walmarts, QVCs, Walgreens, that when a person comes in and says, look, I can't see this, this is how they can help them do this.
Yeah.
Just as simple. And also put equipment in their hands. Like when I got involved with Rehab for the Blind, they gave me magnifiers and all kinds of stuff. You know, and I didn't have any of that. So what I would like to do is when people come to SCCB and they're either lost their sight or they're losing their sight, is to put stuff in their hands so they can maintain their independence and their integrity forever. Mm-hmm. And that be it being rather a sighted person like myself that's still struggling to keep my sight, or a person that is blind or a person that is legally blind. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like I said, you have all different categories, and just like I said, I don't have a cane. I'm supposed to have a cane because I fall a lot, and I have a blind cane with it's white with the red tip. And I said I wasn't quite ready for that yet. I might use a regular cane, but I wasn't quite ready for that yet. And so what I decided, you know, when I joined them, that's been my passion, to educate the community and to make the people that are there protect their independence as long as they can. There comes a time they got to be defended, but most of the time, to me, my independence was very, very important to me. And when I joined them, I got lots of good ideas, and then I hit the ballpark saying, let's do this sensitivity training. And that's sort of what we're working on and it's trying to do right now with that. So,
Yep. And that's great because, you know, I'm empathetic with all the low vision stuff because after I got married and then I became legally blind, I'm struggling with a little magnifier that came from Avon on a necklace. I didn't know about anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, and any of these rehab services for the blind, Missouri Council of the Blind, I thought, I'm not blind.
Right.
You know, so I didn't realize that they can help with low vision too. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that till I was totally blind. You know,
yeah, when
so
my friends invited
totally
me to come to that, when my friends invited me to come, I'm like, Council for the Blind? I'm not blind.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, you know what? You know, with this retinal occlusion, you know, they were starting the shots. And she's like, Linda, sometimes this works, sometimes this don't. I'm not going to promise. You know, thank God it worked with me. But, you know, I wanted to arm myself to be prepared. In the event that does something does, I don't want to be blindsided literally and then be lost and go, now what do I do? If things happen, I can say, okay, yep, I got this, I got that, I got this, you know, I'm going to maintain my independence as long as I possibly can. And then if something does happen, then I've got the tools to help me see me through, literally. I mean, to help me be my eyes and see me through. So that's why I really thought when my friends asked me to join, I'm like, well, for the blind, I'm not blind. And then I got to thinking, you know, I was legally blind at the time, and they weren't sure that I would get any sight back, if any. So I joined and, you know, love these guys. They're awesome.
Yes. And we are very blessed to have you. And that's an area we really need to emphasize, too. We do have a special interest group, Missouri Council Citizens of Low Vision. And we try to hit topics that do affect low vision. Okay, Linda, what would you say is the thing that really is the most frustrating for you being low vision? Is it dealing with the public, or is it threading a needle, or, you know, just daily living things?
It's the person that went to a restaurant down off the strip, and they were all, these little cedars were all black. And then when you got glaucoma, your eyes take a bit to transcend. Okay. And so this gal said, follow me. And I followed her in her little black outfit. And I fell down three flights of stairs. I did not see her go down the steps. And I literally, my head went through the wall. What I get frustrated is that, you know, and I tell the girl, hold on, I can't see. I'll tell them, give me a minute. I can't see. And they'll be like, well, follow me. And so I end up following them. And then, like I said, that's happened on several occasions. It's frustrating for me is, like I said, is that even though I tell them, hey, look, I can't see. And they'll say, well, follow me. And these little black outfits. And next thing you know, I'm falling down a flight of stairs. I'm running into walls. I'm hitting people because they're going so fast. And I'm trying to keep up. So the biggest frustration with me is I'm verbalizing. I'm very verbal. But I'll say, hold on, baby, or, you know, slow down, big girl or little girl or whatever. You know, give me a minute. But my eyes are still outside. You know, give me a minute for my eyes to catch up. Because as soon as my eyes catch up, you know, slow down, slow your roll, you know, and then they'll look at me like, what are you talking about, lady? And then if I'm not with anybody, and then if I am, then like my husband knows that I get embarrassed. So he'll come up and he'll grab me by the hand. And I'll say, come on, babe. And he'll just sort of lead me. My sister or Anita, not my biological, but my she's lived for 35 years. We've been friends. She'll come up to me and say, oh, let me guide you. You can't see where you're going.
Are you kidding? I just want to so you're deaf punch. Now, too.
Oh, my God. I just want to throat punch her, you know. And I'm looking at her, I'm like, do I look like I'm freaking blind? No, I'm not blind. I just can't see the stupid girl in the black outfit, you know. And you know, she's like, well, I'm just trying to help. It's just like when I had my shunt surgery, they put a patch over my good eye, and I was blind, and I'm walking in the house, and there I got Joey on one side and her and the other going, oh, don't go this way, oh no, go this way, oh no, go this way. And I get in the house of 20 years I've lived, 20 years, and they're pushing me in the house, they're, no, go this way, oh, oh. And I finally said, stop, for God's sakes, I've been living in this house for 20 years. I know where the kitchen's at. I know where my chair is at. Back it off, Buttercup. I'm not blind. I literally was at that time. I said, leave me alone. Stop doing that. So yeah, people sometimes drive me crazy. I mean, I broke my tailbone on my best friend coming to me and saying, watch the curve. And then what did I do? I tripped over the curve at her telling me to watch the curve, landed on my bottom, and broke my tailbone.
Oh, no.
It's people that frustrate the tar out of me. It's not, you know, you go to Walmart and you say, hey, I need help. And they look at you like, what? And you're like, I can't read this. And then the lady goes, well, it's right there on this floor. And you almost have to get indignant with them and say, look at me. I can't read the sign, the price, and the ingredients. I need your help. And they go, oh, hey, we got a lady here who can't see. Yeah, that's people is what, that's the ones that frustrates the tar out of me. It's not the, you know, being home. I mean, like that kind of stuff, but it's the, and you know, I was telling somebody, I said, you know, I'm not even all the way 100% blind. I can't even imagine what some of these poor people go through that are. Because first of all, people are, and that's the other thing too, I want to educate people, because people are afraid of people. They're afraid to do anything. And I got to admit, I was too. I didn't want to go to a group with a bunch of blind people. What am I going to say? Oh, do I say things like, did you see that? Oh my God, I can't say that. You know, I freaked out. And so I was a nervous wreck. And then finally, when we sort of did our last social outing, I was scared to death because I had to pick up somebody, me and my husband. I was freaking out. And I went up to her house, and she said, you don't need to come up there. I know how to get to the curb. And I thought, lady, I like you already, you know, and I like you already. And so then we went to the restaurant and I said, okay, look, tell me what you need. If you need to hook up, I got my arm. She goes, nope, I don't need to hook up. You just tell me what I'm seeing and we'll rock and roll. And I'm like, cool beans by me. And I said, you got a curb here, come up here. She goes, okay, now I got to do one more thing. And I said, what's that? And she said, I just want to touch your back. And so that's what she did. She just touched my back. And then I plopped her right next to me into the, at the restaurant. And my husband watched and he said, Linda, he said, you are so good with her. You just like, okay, your water's here, your water's there, you know, your food's here. It's, you know, and she goes, you were so discreet and so, you know, not embarrassing her. And that's how I want to be treated. I do not want to be humiliated and embarrassed. And so
we all need to be treated with dignity.
That's what I want to get out there. Hey, look, just because we have visual issues, don't mean we don't have feelings.
Yep. Yep. Great. Good. Good. And you are going to be such a great asset to St. Charles
Yes.
Council,
Yeah.
Missouri Council.
Yeah. You bet.
You
Yeah.
know, in Louisiana, South Carolina, wherever you want to.
You mean North Carolina when it or South Carolina when it's really North should be North Carolina.
Yes.
Literally, I'm serious. You come north and you hit South Carolina first, and then you hit North Carolina going south.
Wow.
It's a backwards.
Wow.
It's crazy. Only a river town.
Okay. Only in a river town where the river doesn't always flow north and south.
No, it does not.
Oh, but we got to keep a sense of humor. And
yeah,
like you
yeah.
said, just, you know, treat other people with dignity and respect. And oh, wouldn't life be so much easier if we did that?
Well,
and, you know, what works for you may not work for somebody else. You know, mm-hmm. we have to honor that, too.
Well, it's like I told my husband, and finally I sat down, my best friend, I said, the next time you embarrass me in a restaurant out like that, I am going to throat punch you. I said, so, because you humiliated me. And uh-huh. you know, and just because I had an issue seeing doesn't mean that I'm deaf, doesn't mean that I'm dumb, and it doesn't mean I don't have feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, I'm just trying to help. I said, but you be discreet. You know,
yes.
and that's what I want to educate. I want to educate people like stores and workplaces that there are people that it's almost like to me, I was afraid to say it. I was mm-hmm. afraid to say I was losing my sight when I worked for the state of Missouri. I was getting mm-hmm. lost in towns like Jennings and Berkeley and Ferguson and Woodson Terrace. I was getting lost because I couldn't
wow.
read the signs because my eyesight mm-hmm. started failing.
Yeah.
And see, the problem that I had with that, and this is why I really want to get involved with these places, is that I knew that if I went into my boss's office after 27 years and said, look, I can't see the paperwork. I can't see the signs, the street signs. I'm getting lost in towns like Jennings and Berkeley and Ferguson and Spanish Lake. You know, she would say either, then you no longer can work here. So I'm not the only person that's in a workplace that is afraid that if they tell them that they can't do it because of their sight, then
uh-huh.
they're fired. And that's what it was happening. And that literally was happening to me after I retired from the state. I started working for another company and I couldn't mm-hmm. see the receipts and I couldn't see this. And I got fired because I was not able to do my job. But
mm-hmm.
Rehab for the Blind was already on it. And I kept telling them, I'm getting equipment. I'm getting equipment. And unfortunately, it takes a bit to get the stuff from Rehab for the Blind. I got fired in January and I got all my equipment like in March. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I did part-time jobs and I do ministry and that's, and they said, well, you know, as long as they could prove that, you know, that I was working and doing something, and I was an auctioneer, for, several years, I'm actually an auctioneer. And so I had my own auctioneer business, and so that's what I did. And then I also had my ministry at church. I was a children's pastor and associate pastor. I do Bible studies and I do children's ministries. And so they said, well, as long as you're doing that, then you continue to keep that equipment. So, yeah, unfortunately, I got fired because I couldn't do my, I couldn't see the, mm-hmm. couldn't see the paperwork, and they let me go. So, and I know if I'm there, there are other peoples out there that are struggling. And if we can get the tools in their hands so they can keep their job, that some
yeah.
just don't know. I didn't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was Denny or something. I think it was Denny that said, Linda, you need to go Rehab for the Blind. Because, well, he's actually suggested Voc Rehab, and then Voc Rehab suggested Rehab for the Blind. And that's how I got with Rehab for the Blind. Was through mm-hmm. Voc Rehab. But Denny mm-hmm. suggested Voc Rehab, and then Voc Rehab kicked me over to Rehab the Blind. So, mm-hmm. but either way around, I
yep.
was unfortunately I got my stuff too late.
Yeah, and that's why I don't want it to be too late for others, you know. So reaching out to the community, let them know we're here, not just for the blind, but low vision also. you know, and where do we start, and getting resources to people, you know, and I know it's overwhelming sometimes.
It is.
Where do I go?
Well, even like those two families that were homeless, that the two people that were blind and were homeless and had no one to help them. And here these, now imagine that. You are blind and you're living on the street.
Wow.
In your car with your family because you're homeless and you don't have a clue what to do, where to go, how to get out of this mess, and you're at a loss. I mean, I just can't fathom that. And this is where
I can't either.
Where I think, you know, can we help with housing? No, not we can't. But can we help with referrals? And then after they get into the housing, can we help them help figure out some way to get things set up so they can be functioning in their home? Yeah, we can do that kind of stuff. But I mean, that was, you know, we were talking about that the last meeting, you know, that there were two people that we know of that were homeless. I think one was on the street and one was living in a car with their family. So, well, I guess somebody else was driving, but yeah. And just, they were at a loss. They didn't know what to do, or where to go. And that, imagine that, being blind and being homeless, that would scare the tar out of me.
Yeah. We've got so many issues there that we can reach out. We may not be able to help them directly, but maybe we can hold their hand while they go a different direction, you know, but that's a part of being a community.
My sayings is, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And that's sort of what I want to take. We can't eat the whole elephant because there's an elephant out there.
Yeah.
But we can take one bite at a time, and we can take one slice and one bit. And hopefully, it grow not only in education and in numbers and in support and educate the community about, you know, just because a person, you know, how to help those that are blind and not to be afraid to go up to them and not to be scared. They're human. They're, you know, they have a disability. They're no more different than you see someone that has ADHD. It's a disability. It is what it is, you know, don't be afraid. And that's what I want to get out there myself and educate community and folks in the community that, hey, you know, just because I don't have a cane and I don't have a CNI dog, but you know what? When it comes to someone walking in black and I'm coming in from a hot sunny day, I need to see an eye dog in the cane. That's how bad my sight is. You know, like I said, I've fallen down steps. My head went right through the wall. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Because I kept telling her, slow down. I can't see you. Yeah, she didn't slow down.
Yeah. And someday they might figure it out, but, you know, maybe not too. But when we've got people like you on board with as a member, I think we're going to be able to meet a lot of challenges. So I am so glad we are interviewing Linda for Meet the People. And I know we're probably crunched on time here. I'm going to ask real quick, what's your hobby, Linda?
I love the boat. I drive a Spider, it's a three wheeler, two wheels in the front, one in the back. So I love the motorcycle ride. I love to jet ski. I love to boat. I love the water in any way I can get on the water. I love the water. I would probably say, you know, that is my hobby, but my passion is serving the kids and in the children's church and doing my Wednesday night Bible study and serving God. That is my passion. That's my passion. And my second, my hobbies are anything on the water. Love the water. And if I'm not on the water, I'm on my motorcycle outrunning my husband's Harley.
It sounds like she loves the wind in her face.
Yeah.
Well, here's my thinking. I'm 65 years old, and I'm going to have to hang up some of these things. No, not me. Hang up, like I might not be able to go motorcycling. I may not be able to do, as I call it, dancing with my jet ski on the lake. There might be a day that this old girl says, no more, because of whatever, physical capabilities. I don't know, but I'm gonna live life hard, fast, and continuously as long as I can. And I'm going to grab it and keep it going. So
good for you. Good for you.
And I love hanging out with the folks at, you know, with Bev and everybody. And I just, I'm so excited because, you know, we sort of regrouped and that's two cool beans. And we've got some awesome, awesome, awesome officers. And, you know, our first meeting, we had like 15 people. I was so excited. You know, we just regrouped. They're still up. We regrouped. And we've got people that are excited and wanting to get out there and get involved. And I'm pumped about that. I'm totally pumped. Is God, as my family, my friends at SCCB, and my hobbies or anything on the water are going fast and crazy.
I love it.
I do fish once in a while. I do fish. Not as much as my husband would like. I only catch fishes in midair. I don't catch fishes like anybody else. So that's a fish.
Did you say fish in midair?
Midair. Yep.
Okay.
I got to tell you.
Okay, that's going to be another.
This is the true story. I'll try. My son, my nephew that I raised, was catching a fish after fish after fish. And I looked at him. And I mean, I had the best holes, the best tackle. I mean, I had the best of everything, and I'm not catching a spitting thing. So I said, Joey, here he had this little Walmart fishing pole that we bought him. I said, how in the world are you catching fish? And I've got all this expensive equipment, and I ain't catching a stinking thing. And he said, Pooh Bear, which is what he called me. He said, well, Pooh Bear, every time I cast my pole out, I say, Jesus, help me catch a fish. And I catch a fish. And I'm like, no freaking way. He goes, I'm telling you. So I took my $700 expensive fishing pole, put on that minnow, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give this a try. So I said it really soft. Jesus, help me catch that fish. And I'm telling you, this is not a fishing story. That fish jumped out of that water, grabbed that bait, snapped onto that hook, and I snagged that sucker right in the midair. Not a fishing story. The people seen it. They couldn't believe it. And so I looked at Joey and I said, oh my word, Joey, I just caught my first fish. We took a picture and everyone's like, there is no way. And my sister and my nephew will confirm it if they're there. No, she caught that fish in midair. So
That's a whole new story to I Will Make You Fishers of Men.
There you go. There you go.
Oh, Chip, you better take over.
Oh, my. Linda, it's just been so wonderful interviewing you this afternoon. You've been such a wonderful person to get to know and to interview. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, but thank you so much for being our special guest here today on Meet the People of MCB.
All right. Well, you know what? I'd like to meet the people of MCB because I'd like to get involved with you guys and like to help out your end too. So maybe I can meet the people at MCB and pitch in and help out and get involved because that's something I've always wanted to do. But I didn't know how to do it, so there it is.
Okay. Very good, yeah. All right.
You may not be able to handle me, I don't know. Me and Bev just laugh, and we hug. That's the end of it. I'm the wild child.
Okay, how about if we just say amen?
There you go. Well, I hope that made you smile and laugh a little and have a good day.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you know somebody that you would like for Bev and I to interview besides Linda Musgrove, you can call me, Chip Paley, at 417-540-9703.
Or Beverly Cascaden at 636-561-6947.
You never know. You might hear yourself right back here next time on Meet the People of MCB. Enjoy your week, everybody, and we'll see you back here in about a week
or so.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.